This is Out and About on Peoria Public Radio. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Suzette Boulay with Arts Partners of Central Illinois. We're talking with David Commande from the Heartland Festival Orchestra. Their new season starts with a concert tomorrow night at Five Points. David, so good to see you again.
It's always great to visit with you.
Now, the anchor piece, I would say, the highlight of the concert is probably the Jupiter Symphony by Mozart. But I'd like to talk a little bit about another Mozart piece, which is the Flute and Harp Concerto. Mm-hmm. This is a great piece, and I don't know why it works so well. I sometimes think it has something to do with the fact that you don't expect to hear those two instruments together. What insight can you bring into that piece, and why did you choose it for the program?
Well, I chose it in part because there's the beauty of the work in its own favor. It's just a wonderful piece of music. When people hear it, they want to hear it again. And they also often have this aha experience. But I think part of the reason it works is the beauty of the sounds created by that combination of the flute and the harp. The interesting thing is that Mozart, when he wrote this, it was during his travels, he had a period of time. He came back to Paris, had been there early on as a young tyke. But he came back to make his living in Paris, and he came looking for work. And the work that he got, some of the work he got, was teaching. And he was teaching composition. But one of his composition students happened to be this very fine harpist. The student's father played the flute, and he was a nobleman. So that's how this whole thing was happening. Of course, the nobleman was paying for the lessons, and he put it together. He wrote this piece for the father and the daughter, the flute and the harp. But at the time, he didn't especially like these instruments. It's fascinating because he wasn't that fond of the flute and the harp. And by the way, the harp was not as advanced technologically in those days as it has become. So modulations, changes of key in the harp were not so simple as they are with the later mechanism of all the pedals. So this piece was written in C major in a key that was good for the harp. Harpists will tell you that it's extra hard to play because it's almost like it's a piano part. They have the so-called five-finger writing for both hands. So it's a little bit awkward. But all of that aside, the sound, the way he uses the harp, almost because he doesn't get into that cliched later technique of the glissandos and the chords, you know, all the running up and down the strings all at one time and just kind of mushing everything together. It's very clear. It's a very clear, gorgeous voice. And of course, the flute floats above that. And then the orchestral part is so transparent. So the combination of all those parts come together is just magical.
And I don't know what it is that made it instantly recognizable, almost familiar, but talk a little bit about what then is the joy for you in conducting this piece.
Well, some music you just love to sing, to play. You just the fact that you're part of making those sounds come to life it's a joy. It's a lot of fun. And of course, in this case, we have two wonderful soloists, and that's the other part of my answer, that our principal flutist, Kim Reisinger, and our harp player, Molly McKenzie Madden, are wonderful musicians, and I'm always delighted to feature our stars from within the orchestra.
Another piece on the program is the third set of The Ancient Airs and Dances by Respighi. Now, I know that Respighi often went back in musical history to write The Ancient Airs and Dances, but is there a particular specific Mozart influence that he's drawing on, or is this just a piece that you thought would sit really well next to the Mozart on the program?
Well, this is typical of the process of putting some programs together. It struck me as a good idea, and then later on I discovered more of the ways that there are cross themes and cross elements between one piece and another. So in this case, it's almost back engineering to say that the final work on our program, the Mozart Jupiter Symphony, also looks backward a little bit in the use of a Baroque technique of the strict fugue, which is such an important element of that last movement of Mozart's 41st Symphony, the Jupiter. And so in that way, there is a little bit of a looking back in the Mozart, just as Respighi, and we should make it clear for the listeners, in the Ancient Airs and Dances, Respighi, who was a fan of so-called old music, took lute songs, songs and dances written for the lute, in some cases by specific composers, or in a few of them they're anonymous composers. He took those tunes and he set them for a more modern ensemble, not on the lute, obvious, but in this case, set number three, it's just for strings alone, but modern strings. And so he uses the strings with modern techniques having to do with multiple chords, you know, going across all four strings one after the other, to in some ways not only reproduce what the lute could do, but in fact enrich what that is. So Respighi takes some old music and he gives it a new, more modern garb, while at the same time preserving some of the charm and the feel of those songs and dances. So that was that's the cross pollination in a way that I wasn't all that conscious of when I first picked it.
And talk about the Mozart's 41, his Jupiter. Wasn't that his last concert?
It was his last symphony, yes. And it was not given that name by Mozart himself. It was called the Jupiter Symphony by a man named Jonathan Kramer, who was a publisher, a German publisher. And the trouble is that, well, the fact is the name stuck. And something about the power and the majesty and the scope of this symphony seemed to suit it. I certainly think so. And Just to go step back one little bit, the harp concerto written in 1778. Now, Mozart is at that point 22. Well, a whole decade later, we've come a third of the way farther along in poor Mozart's short life. We're really at the height of his maturity in 1788 with this last symphony. Now, he lived a few more years and wrote some very important works, but this was the last of the symphonies. And in it, we hear some of the things that we associate with just mainstream Mozart, having to do with the natural grace and the beauty and the symmetry and the balance and so forth. But you also hear these certain elements where he is thinking and devising and fitting in ways that are more mature than ever. That last movement in particular, when that famous fugal moment, it's not at the beginning of the last movement, but there is this fugue. Dim, dum, 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 da-da-da-dum. And the voices come in one after the other after the other, and this incredible complexity. You just sort of imagine, I'm thinking, sitting with you, Suzette, of a visual element. Imagine a portrait of a face, but then from several angles, and then them being juxtaposed one after the other at different depths and so forth. So these themes come in one after the other, and they each moment, each entrance sheds a new light on that theme. And then the whole thing comes together in this magnificent tapestry of color and invention, and it's irresistible. It's irresistible. This last movement, it just drives forward like some kind of a juggernaut. And, you know, you asked me about what's it like to do it. I mean, it's exhilarating to listen to and, of course, to conduct.
I've often felt like in the late Mozart works, there's an emotional power to them. There's sort of a level of drama to them that sometimes is missing in more of the early works. Is the last symphony similar in that way?
Yes, and then, of course, some of the dramatic works, as in the operas and the songs, they give an opportunity to hear how dramatic Mozart was able to be and, in fact, was naturally. I think the man developed tremendous depth. I mean, just think, as a young boy, he's introduced to this world in which there is nobility, and then there's the power of the church, and everything is controlled, and everything is hierarchy, and his job is to come along and decorate this world. Well, it turned out he had a gift for decoration which went so much deeper than mere decoration, and he developed these insights. But the fascinating thing is that to develop those insights, he went through these experiences. He had essentially to step back from the role that was expected him to play, instead of just being a mere wall painter and mere decoration of this gallant life. He was attracted to, or seemed to be able to express things of much greater importance than mere decorations. And of course, through those operas, even though most of them were comedies, he gives us insights into human nature with the simplest of means. One little tune goes right to your heart, and it resonates. And Of course, no one piece of Mozart's going to tell you everything. But the thing that has struck me more and more strongly through my life experience with Mozart is that Mozart is always dramatic, always connecting, always dramatic.
So the concert is tomorrow night, but then next weekend you're also presenting some chamber music. You've got another Mozart concert and lecture at Eureka College?
In my role as artist in residence at Eureka College, I've been developing, first of all, string programming and string instruction. I'm teaching cello and violin already, and we're putting ensembles together, as well as summer programming. But during the season, I'm giving a series of lectures. So last night I gave a talk about Mozart, the man and his music, at the college. And then a week from Sunday, the 15th of September, is the first in our recital series. And Kim Reisinger and Molly Madden will be playing in that recital. I'll play some cello. We have Sarah Gentry, our concertmaster, and Diane Wuthrich, our principal viola, also playing music of well, again, Mozart, but Bach and Marin Marais and von Dohnányi, and then some Piazzolla tango music, actually, for flute and harp. So that's 2 o'clock on the 15th at McAllister Hall and the chapel at Eureka College.
And I know that with every concert, you always work with some other organization in the community as your community partner. Who have you chosen this time?
This time it's the Neighborhood House, which for over 100 years has been helping people on the south side of Peoria to help themselves. Really good folks.
David Commande is the artistic director of the Heartland Festival Orchestra. The first concert of their new season is tomorrow night at 7:30 at Five Points, Washington. David, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Nathan.
Nathan, this Sunday at 3 p.m., the Dingeldine Music Center at Bradley University presents its Music Scholarship Series recital, A Little Chamber Music. Musical artists will perform rarely heard musical treasures by composers such as Samuel Barber and Ferruccio Busoni.
And finally, Suzette, our friends at the Drunken Zombie Deadly Double Feature are back this weekend with two more movies. As usual, they're pairing up a classic horror film with one that's a little more recent. The offerings this weekend are Teenage Zombies and Melvin. It all starts tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the Landmark Cinemas in Peoria.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio when you visit us on the web at peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.